keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Make sure you guys check out UCY, bookmark the radio website, and check out all the other awesome journalists and voices that you can hear on UCY, you know, get a different perspective. I always like to make the point that you can listen to this stuff in your car when you're driving to and from work, because it's mobile friendly. Just plug it into your auxiliary or maybe even Bluetooth. And then you could also listen to our show archives if you scroll over there to the left-hand side of the UCY.TV/TAMR. Site there, you'll see the archives, the show archives, so you can go back and listen to last week's show. Last week was great. We had a bunch of callers, and Lisa joined us, one of our journalists that was embedded in Ferguson. She gave us an update about what's going on there. I got a few more updates, some good news actually coming out of Ferguson at least, and some other good news, which is pretty good, I guess, because you know, this horrible news can get people down and stuff like that, even though we got to talk about it, because otherwise no one's going to, you know, we're never going to make headway in this awareness revolution. So, you know, right. We got to talk about the bad stuff all the time, but it's always nice to have some good news. I'm joined by my co-host here, DB Schwartz. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm kind of watching what's going on with Ferguson and watching how people are reacting. And, you know, people are understanding now that if you come together, if enough attention shined, that, you know, the world power of the American public is still stronger than the government. The sands may be shifting, but we still have more power than they do, obviously, because they pulled out. And they basically gave into the will of the people that we do not want a militarized police state. And it's basically spearheading efforts everywhere now. I know one of the stories you'll probably break in is that, you know, in Sacramento now they want to get rid of the NRAP, and we need to get rid of ours, and there is no police department in any city in the country that needs one of those things. Maybe Chicago, but that'd be about it.
What they need in Chicago is to legalize drugs and to legalize gun ownership, man. And that would probably solve most of Chicago's problems, because if you look at what's going on in Chicago, A, you got a bunch of urban poverty, and then you got a bunch of drug, basically gangs that are organized via drug dealing. So, I mean, the same exact thing happened here where I'm at, man. We used to have a lot of gangs around here, and they were all organized with money they got from selling, you know, this weed that was coming up across the border right here. And when California, you know, passed Prop 215 and all that stuff, we saw a drastic, and I mean drastic, reduction in the gang presence around here, man. They were everywhere before, and now it's very, very minimum. And you may see, like, you know, you may see individuals that look like gangsters, but you're not going to see a mob of, like, 40 people mobbing down the street doing all kinds of horrible things. Like they, like it was maybe 10, 15 years ago when I was in middle school and stuff like that, because back then it was pretty bad. But after they legalized the drugs, or legalized marijuana, which is the most prominent, prominently used drug around here, all those gangs pretty much had to go their separate ways, man, and all those guys had to go on and get regular jobs and stuff like that, because it became something that wasn't being trafficked illegally up through the border. It became something that anyone could grow at their own house, and then it switched over from everyone's drug dealer being just the dude that they know that grows weed, you know. And so not only does it get rid of the drug violence, but it brings the money into the community, man. All this drug use, it's just like Walmart. It's, you're funneling money out of the community, and it's winding up in the hands of the really bad people. You know, the people that are, you know, the cartels that are actually killing people and stuff over this.
The corporations. And the corporations of the world, the Fortune 500s, are the biggest gangs, the biggest cartels. And look what they're doing to people in places like Detroit now, where what's going to happen if you don't get water out of your tap? Do you really think these people can just go buy bottled water or go over to the lake with a life straw every day, like walk back and forth with barrels of water and take weird showers and stuff? I mean, we're not living in the third world, yet they want to try to force that on different communities and see how people will take it, and they're not going to take it. I mean, there's no reason with our power, our wealth, and our infrastructure for anyone to ever have less than what the generations before us had. But the problem is they want to take it away. They've always wanted to take it away, and they're doing it now because people don't know their rights. And I think what Ferguson did, among other things, was make people realize you have an infinite amount of power if you understand what your power is.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. We have a caller coming on the show now. Hey, how's it going? You're on the Anti-Media. Okay, they dropped.
Yeah, I mean, it's breaking the grasp of these power institutions that don't really serve any real purpose. People just keep going to them because they're lost or there's nobody to guide them. And we can put in a lot of organized religion into this. We can put in government in general. And then big business, when it becomes a conglomerate and it's able to pretty much affect things outside of its own sphere, like any of these massive companies can do with their billions and billions of dollars. We have a major problem, man, with so many people in the world that don't understand what they're capable of and kind of get led around and live these mediocre lives.
Yep, and, you know, it's so horrible what's going on in Chicago, because it's just a combination of a lot of bad things, including bad laws, bad government, corruption, poverty, all that stuff. And then to add all that into the system, you got this war on drugs, which is really the catalyst, which pretty much causes, which helps cause poverty, helps cause mass incarceration, it helps cause these gangs and stuff, because all the drug dealing has to go on in the illegal market. And so just like the cartels, it's the bad guys that end up having the money and selling the drugs. And it's not that they're bad people per se, but I mean, a lot of these guys are probably just entrepreneurs that don't have the means of access to, you know, bigger business, other kinds of businesses and things like that. So what we really need to do, if we're going to talk a little bit here about Chicago and the mass violence, is rethink it, because all these guys, like, if you look at the reforms that people talk about in Chicago, it's like, oh yeah, there's a bunch of people getting shot, let's throw more gun laws on them, you know, as if that has done anything to help the situation to date. In fact, I mean, arguably more gun laws is just more victims, you know. So that obviously isn't the answer. Cracking down on all these people isn't the answer, because it's that's not going to fix the problem. Throwing people in jail is going to make the problem worse. So, yeah, I mean, they need to legalize guns, legalize entrepreneurship, legalize the drug trades, and let people come out from the shadows where they where they are able to use these kind of violent tactics and get away with this stuff. Because in a regular business, you can't go around, like, you know, killing people and stuff and forcing them to get your product. So if we did this kind of thing, then it would bring all this stuff to light. And so then people that had bad business practices would be, people would know, find out about it. They would know about it. There'd be like a review system like Yelp, where you could say, okay, well, I don't want to deal with that guy. He uses strong arm tactics. Okay, cool. But yeah, I mean, so many things that can be done. Let's jump into this decent news here. A few news updates that I have that are actually kind of good news. Davis County, which is what DB was mentioning at the beginning of the show here, the city council has told the police department that it must get rid of a military vehicle that it has received, and it's got to get rid of it in the next 60 days. And people in this county, and Davis County, I believe, is where, it's either where Sacramento is located or nearby. Obviously, the people have got encouraged by, and maybe not so much encouraged, but now they're just finding out about these MRAPs and this militarization of the police because of all the coverage that we got out of Ferguson. So I mean, it's emboldened people all over the country to get to actually find a voice now and stand up to this police militarization. Now, I know we talked about it last show with Alex about how, you know, here in San Diego, where we're at, they're militarizing the hell out of the police. DB, you actually sent me that link that was basically a list detailing all of the acquisitions that our local authorities had gotten. And I think it came out to like 3 pages or something like that. Well, it was ridiculous.
And that was just San Diego. And when I looked into what LA had, it was mind-blowing. They're fully prepared. I believe they had 10 MRAPs. I mean, this is going to... That can pretty much transport their entire SWAT division to one spot, armored, and protect it. And what are they going to use that for? Who knows? But they have that. They have drones. They have everything you could think of, man. And, you know, they don't even have that much. They really don't, because we have such a huge military presence here that we don't need the heavy, heavy militarization of the police here, because we have the real guys. But in other communities, in smaller communities, and especially places that I hate to always use this term, but the Rust Belt, places that are economically declined and there's major populations of people that more or less depend on the government to survive. And when the government goes broke, well, they're going to have a militarized police state to basically try to keep law and order. I mean, it's pretty obvious what's going on. We got to stop it. We got to take them out. And when I say take them out, take away their capacity to make war on the people, because they are the people. They need to get that into their head. They are us. They're no better. They're just like we are. And if they side against us, well, you know, they're going to be fighting a big segment of the military that will side with the people in the Constitution as well, and they're armed, so they're a threat. What do they think is going to happen to them when people that really want to fight for the side of what most people with a brain think is right see them as a real threat?
Yeah, and I think, to me at least, this you know, Ferguson stuff, it's horrible what happened to Mike Brown and then all the stuff following it, I think, couldn't have gone better. In fact, even though the police did horrible things, it actually shed so much light everywhere, and got into so many homes. And you know, we push this cop block stuff all the time, but I mean, there's still normally it's a limited reach. You know, you're only reaching a couple 100,000 people that are like hardcore, you know about what's going on, and they hardcore object to this stuff. But now, what went on over in Ferguson brought it into everybody's living rooms. and everybody's town, and now this data comes available where anyone could look up their town and see what kind of militarized gear they got. And I wouldn't doubt that's probably what happened up in Sacramento. They probably had already been going against it for a while, because Sacramento police are pretty notoriously horrible as well. But yeah, man, I mean, it's really bringing this whole militarization of the police to a head. And it's hilarious seeing Obama talk about it like he's surprised. He's like, oh, well, we got to look into this militarization stuff. It's like, dude, you're the one that like presided over the NDAA and all that stuff. I mean, come on. So back to this initial story here about Davis County, California. The controversy over the mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle, which is what the MRAP is, attracted a large crowd on Tuesday that was largely against it. The city council adopted the resolution to come up with a plan to get rid of the vehicle. A petition is circulating asking the council to press the police to either get rid or destroy it. So, I mean, the people out there are just adamantly against it. And here's what one of the guys had to say. I would like to say I do not suggest you take this vehicle and send it out of Davis. I demand it. And he's like chanting it, I demand it, you know, and this is one of the guys that was at the press release or whatever, city council meeting, whatever this thing was. So yeah, they're pretty hyped up about it. We talked on Monday about these cops over in the mayor over in Miami is now requiring all of his police to use the body cams and all that stuff. So, I mean, it seems to me like we kind of got these guys on the run. Now, here's our next police story, which is another little bit of good news here. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's horrible what they did, of course, but it's good that they're coming forward. It shows that these cops are finally getting ready to start breaking ranks, it seems like. Anyway, five Florida police officers told the Waldo County Council, City Council last night, that they've been under a strict quota to write traffic tickets, which is a violation of state law, Florida state law. Officer Brandon Roberts told council members on Tuesday night that they were required by Chief Mike Sabazo to write 12 speeding tickets per 12-hour shift or face punishment. He offered an electronic presentation and printed emails as evidence. So basically, we got these whistleblower cops, and I think there's like three of them that came out. And they're like, hey, look, we're ready to blow the whistle on this stuff. This is what our chief, you know, our captain or whatever is having us do. So I think this could be a kind of a signal of a broader shift that's starting to go on with all this horrible, horrible press that the police departments have been getting. And it's almost become like the cool thing. I made a meme today. I haven't posted it yet. But it was with Eazy-E, and he's like saying, it's like, he was saying F the police before it was cool, you know. But it's kind of become a pop culture thing now to criticize the police, and all these guys that are able to get these horrible police misconduct incidences on film are almost treated like rock stars nowadays. So I really think that the awareness war on this stuff, on what the police are doing and how they've become a tool of the corporate state and all that stuff, I think the battle has been won for now. And right now we're in the process of winning this war, where basically we could actually turn these institutions around and actually have them do what they're supposed to do, which is protect us and not be protecting big government or big corporations. You know, and that's ideally what we can do for now, until eventually we get ourselves into a position in the future. Now, I don't think this is possible within the next 10 years, but someday soon it could be possible where we can totally get rid of traditional police and government-based policing and stuff like that. Because,
well, all it'll take is just one time for them to really rear their ugly head and let people know what they think of them and the superiority complex of a lot of these guys, combined honestly with what they look for, which is low intelligence, man. And when these guys get, you know, exposed and called out for what they are, and they start coming down heavy-handed and honestly probably taking people's lives to prevent looting and food riots and other things, you know, assuming that the dollar actually does die and we don't go into a World War III scenario, that's what we have to look forward to, and we got to cut it off before they have a chance to initiate it. And then we'll let the government and the military and everybody at the very highest echelons fight it out and decide what happens. But at our local level, what activists can do is put political pressure on the departments to get rid of these things. Break them down for scrap iron. Or better yet, say, hey, if you guys are going to be allowed to do this, then we want you to charter militias for us. You guys can't cover our communities, and when you do, you abuse us. So we need our ability to police ourselves, and we need equipment and training. It'll get back to that point because people are tired of it. They don't want to be killed by a police officer in their own community. That's not something anybody ever aspires to do. So they're there for the protection of us, to keep people from going crazy when there's, you know, disputes and things like that. And I would say then maybe property protection, because those things can be rebuilt and they got to be reprioritized. And if things keep going the way they are, they'll probably all have to be disarmed, just like the UK.
Non-lethal. I mean, why not give them non-lethal weaponry so that they don't cap people in the streets anymore? I mean, it's just kind of obvious that should be one of the next steps. And you're right. We need to get pressure on even those that don't believe in politics. I don't believe in politics myself. But if you have an opportunity to enhance or improve your near future, and it has to be through, and it winds up having to be through getting a bunch of people down to the city council and pressuring these guys to get rid of these MRAPs and these armored vehicles and to demilitarize the police, so be it. I mean, that may be a step you have to take. I mean, we're not going to build a perfect society overnight, and that's obvious. And I have so many friends that are, you know, anarchists and stuff, and I completely sympathize with that cause. But it's not something that we're going to be able to do overnight. There are very, very deep issues that humanity as a whole really needs to work on. I don't know of any country that doesn't have any, you know, horrible issues that they're dealing with. You know, it's something that we have to grow as a whole, all of humanity, and thank the internet for expediting this kind of intellectual and informational revolution. Because without it, I mean, we'd still be stuck with the snail mail stuff, and, you know, who knows. You know, they censor the internet. They have the NSA track all of our digital stuff. What kind of dragnet do you think they used to have on the mail process? I mean, you know, the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, and all these guys, they probably had the mail completely censored and stuff like that. I wouldn't doubt it a bit. Now with the internet, man, it's really unlocked a lot of this capability that we have as humans to kind of realize things and get past things. Like, hopefully war can be the next big thing that we can kind of put behind us. And then nationalism and racism and everything that comes along with statism, you know, sooner or later, we got to put all that behind us, you know. And it's not going to happen overnight, but I don't think it's going to take that long either. I don't think it's going to take more than 20, 30 years max. I think it could happen at the rate that we're going right now, especially with the technological stuff and the open source energy production and all that stuff. All that stuff goes hand in hand with freedom and at least representation of yourself and liberty. And you know, being independent and not having to rely on any state or any system is really the precursor to getting to that point.
That's how you get rid of the great evils of the world. I mean, they're all precluded on the ability to create labor and wealth and power out of thin air, because that's what they do with printing presses and with fiat currencies. You couldn't go to a bank now and get gold and take that gold somewhere else in the world and get fair value for it. You'll lose tons and tons of value in the process of changing your money, even if you purchase on the Forex. So you're stuck in this labor trap. You're on this hamster wheel. And you keep buying into these things that they've been working really well for a long time until there's one hiccup. The one hiccup could be anything. It could be climate change. It could be war. it could just simply be the death of the dollar, since no one wants to trade with a place that doesn't follow the rules, which we haven't done for a long, long time. So whatever happens, it's going to force those in the know and those who can adapt to pretty much get into this new paradigm. Those who can't, they're going to be at the whim of the people with resources, which is the government. That's what the camps are for and everything else. So we try to stave off all of that. We try to head it off, beat it there, try to get people around us in the know. And it's starting to work, man. I'm actually really encouraged, because people that I never thought 2-3 years ago that would be talking to me about these things now are kind of blabbing my head off like they've had a great awakening I had 6-7 years ago. And it's hitting them now, and it's great. It's a great thing to see, because Ferguson and everything like it, it's easy to see through it now, even for people that are suffering from cognitive dissonance. They're seeing it now. They can't help it.
Yeah, it's like a massive shift that's going on, and really Ferguson was the precursor to this, and I don't want to take it out of context here, because first of all, we have to honor Mike Brown and hopefully seek justice for what happened to him, and no one deserves to die unarmed, shot in the back or whatever, and then in the front, especially a young kid like that. I mean, it's just horrible. But it has kind of brought to a boil this underlying tension that's been brewing up between the population that's been basically screwed over by the government and by the corporate class that runs the government. And I think we're getting close to the point where people are just going to say, you know what? No, screw you. We're done with it. We're not going to do it anymore.
I think it's there. There's people that have degrees, and this is recently, and have good jobs, and they're invested in the system, and they're over it. A direct quote from somebody I never thought would say it: I want to move to a mountain and become a hermit. I just can't be part of this system and live around these stupid people. And I said, man, it's not everyone. We got to wake people up, but I understand what you're saying. Things are going on that are changing our way of life as we speak, and nobody's doing anything about it in large enough numbers to make these people stop. I don't know if there's something in the works among the higher-ups of all kinds of different counterculture movements, but we've been saying for years that everything's going to boil down to not needing these people anymore, because then we don't have to listen to them. And it's that simple. And the technology's here right now. I, in fact, myself, finally took the plunge and got, you know, an off-grid solar system with a hydroponic setup, man. And so now I can do what I need to do anytime, any place, anywhere, as long as there's sun, and there's always going to be that. And my next step up is a solar water distiller. And I can get water a gallon and a half a day just sitting there, probably 2 where we live, Nick. And that's the purest water. That's the stuff you'd be spending $10 a gallon on if you went and bought it at a Whole Foods. So, and that'll run forever. So the stuff's here now. We don't need these people anymore. We don't need them. Just get rid of them. And we will. And they're getting really desperate about it. This technology stuff they thought they were going to be able to control, it's open.
So, I mean, it's completely true what you're saying. And it's like, you know, we the people, the oppressed common people of this country, for the longest time have been controlled by, whether it's the utility monopolies, the oil monopolies, the Walmarts of the world, the banking, central banking cartels, the Federal Reserve, all the big banks that run the Federal Reserve. You know, this whole monopoly scheme and all this whole pyramid scheme stuff. It can all be brought down simply by turning our backs on this system. You know, that's what we need to do as a people. And I know it's so scary for people. And like I said just a few minutes ago, it's not going to happen overnight. But we need to come together, ideally, I think, at the community level, and figure out ways to turn our backs on the system, whether it's going into a cooperative power grid by everybody in your neighborhood pitching in and setting up your own solar system, or whether it's through community gardening, whether it's through taking back your city councils, taking back control of your local government, or setting up your own community police force, any of these ways, whichever way people choose to go, at least what you should be doing, you can't do it all at once, but you should at least be trying to do something, you know, and it's going to take time, and the sooner you start, the more people, the more time you have, the better things will turn out in the shorter amount of time, you know. So if everybody out there started to do something, whether it was planting seeds at a park or putting fruit trees in somewhere or setting up your own local currency or taking the initiative to get a solar panel set up for you and a few of your neighbors to share, whatever it is, man.
You know, plant your own trees, avocado trees. They take years. I get that. But if it became such a conscious effort from people to Johnny Appleseed where they lived, and furthermore, for us to get away from this asinine notion of landscaping for aesthetics, which is just so stupid. We could grow on our own public dime enough food falling from trees that the homeless would never need to line up for any of these soup kitchens. And they could go about their lives doing what they need to do by foraging and not be this, you know, public nuisance and possible crime, you know, problem that happens when they congregate around these shelters and such. We could change the entire system around, and people just need to become aware of that. Why do you go spend money on food? Just pick it off a tree. Now, will that hurt groceries and restaurants? Sure, I guess so. But, I mean, things are going to change and adapt because, let's face it, if you can't get a job for a long period of time and you're homeless, you understand how hard it is to get a meal, man, even though we're in the land of plenty. And we need to take care of everyone here. There's no excuse not to. We have the ability to do it. And if we don't do it, then, like the elites have been planning for, there will be that revolution since there's too many people hurting. And it's just an overwhelming mass. And it builds and builds, and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Slowly we break away from the system. And the biggest part of the whole piece of the puzzle, I think, in my opinion anyway, is the whole dollar system and the pyramid scheme that is the money that we all use and that we all depend on to live and to pay rent and to get food and all that stuff. This system, just by using the dollar, just simply by doing something like that, you are basically paying taxes or more like tithes to the banksters, right into the pockets of the richest people in the entire world. And it's a system that's hegemonic. It's forced upon many, many nations of the world. And that's probably, according to many people, is the main reason why we went into Libya, which I think was in 2011, and toppled over the Gaddafi regime, because he was getting ready to break away from the dollar. And it's a huge usury system, and it robs us all.
It's not over in Libya because now our puppets are bombing the rebels who don't want to go to a fiat system. They want gold for their oil, and they want to trade almost exclusively with Africa. You see how they have a completely different notion than what we thought they would have when we kind of armed them, and now we're using all these little puppets to make these proxy strikes on them, the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia and such, and it's spiraling out of control because these people that have wargamed this out and used all kinds of quantum computing and stuff, they just never really fully account for the thing that we've been missing for a long time, which is the human element that you can never, ever account for, and the improbability of everything. And did they ever really think that the American public would wake up? They pretty much were assuming that our generation would be just like the baby boomers and assume everything was just fine. And guess what? We don't get our news from TV or the paper or the radio even. It's all internet now. We read every different source and we know what's really going on. And it screwed everything up for them. It really did, because they can't go in with the military anywhere now. It has to all be done with Black Ops, and that stuff's seriously expensive and very inefficient.
And sooner or later, all this Black Ops stuff, just the Black Ops stuff, just wears off, man. All this counterintelligence and clandestine operations by the CIA, whether we're talking about arming the Syrian rebels, which has been documented, or whether we're talking about arming the Libyan rebels, which has been documented. Whether we're talking about the CIA's creation of the Taliban and their creation of the Al-Qaeda, their policies leading to the creation of ISIS and all this stuff. It's been a failure all around, and I think, you know, that's the thing, is that the government has all these big plans and all this stuff they want to do, but unfortunately, they're very bad at planning stuff out, and everything they try to do normally doesn't work out right. And so the perfect example to me is the internet, because we all know the internet is a product of the Department of Defense. They created it back in like the 60s and 70s or whatever, and then it started becoming very widespread in the 90s. And these guys probably figured, yeah, you know, this we can use this stuff for our advantage, and, you know, they had the NSA in mind and all that stuff. And yeah, they do have the NSA and all that. But they did not, they were unable to plan for what, like what you said, the human element, the human element, the innovation of humanity and our capabilities with the internet and what it has created. I mean, look at the stuff that's been created via the internet will just blow your mind. I mean, we've gotten more stuff done in the past 10 years than, I mean, because of the internet, than probably most of humanity had ever got done. I mean, think about the computing power now that we have. The computing power back when they sent the missions up into space initially. Right.
I mean, everything's changing now because we have things like SpaceX, which, by the way, I don't know if you saw, Nick, that one of their rockets exploded, and some people said it might have been sabotage and all that other stuff, because once the commercialization of space becomes prevalent, we'll be able to go up there and see all kinds of crazy stuff like the Black Knight satellite and all kinds of weird things floating up there, and then get a view of things they don't want us to do. So they're going to try to delay that as long as they can. But you're right. It's going to change in leaps and bounds now, because if you had a 3D printer, you could engineer literally anything provided you could get the raw materials for it. And you don't have to play into the economy anymore, really, at all. You become kind of like a bulk buyer, and you can start making wholesale deals because everyone in your neighborhood may have 3D printers, and you can start designing and building things you all may need. Things like windmills could be built with 3D printing, and even solar panels. And you can see how once you start with one, it becomes an exponential thing. And eventually, if enough people cooperate together and kind of invest, they can get off-grid completely, and whole big banks and whole towns can do this. And once this stuff starts happening, well, when those people don't have to go to work, don't have to rely on the system to survive anymore, and aren't scared about their kids going hungry if they don't do an exemplary job at a job they hate, then everything changes, and the innovation will just explode once that happens.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it's all about, is pushing the limits with this technology that we have access to right now with the internet. And so I thought that, you know, I figure the government created the internet out of their own purposes, figured they'd use it to track us all down and keep a tabs on everybody and all that, but they didn't account for the innovation that was going to go on, and so they lost track of it. They lost control, just like they lost control of ISIS, and just like they lost control of Al-Qaeda, and just like they lost control of the Taliban, at least partially. The government does things that they think are going to work out in their favor, and then these things end up backfiring. Now, are these perpetual wars working out for certain people? Yes. These perpetual wars, whether we're talking about Libya, and I think what you were referring to, DV, a few minutes ago, were these mysterious, quote-unquote, mysterious airstrikes that are hitting Libya. And nobody really knows where they're coming from. And like you said, they're probably coming out of our proxy governments like Egypt or Qatar or Saudi Arabia or whatever. And they're going in, they're striking points in Libya. And it makes sense what you were saying there about, you know, a lot of these guys in Libya, because what you have going on there is basically a continuation of the civil war. When we went and knocked Gaddafi out of power, because at first Gaddafi was just like Assad. He was actually getting the upper hand on these rebels. And when once he started getting the upper hand, that's when the U.S. stepped in and bombed the hell out of him and then wound up, you know, having the guy killed. But nothing has really changed since the time that Gaddafi has gotten out, other than the fact that the civil war is now kind of a up-for-grabs, three-way thing, just like in Syria. I mean, and also just like in Iraq. It almost seems to be a pattern that these guys are shooting for. Maybe they figure if you have three different rivals in one country, that's the way to make the most money for the military-industrial complex. I don't know. I don't know what these guys are thinking. But whatever it is, it's sick. It's twisted, and it's sadistic, because what they're doing is sacrificing thousands and thousands of lives, and the only good coming out of it is massive amounts of profits for the military-industrial complex, companies like Halliburton, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, and all these guys, and then their handlers, which, of course, back during the Iraq debacle was Dick Cheney. And now you've got new players in the game, and whoever they are, it doesn't really matter because the rules of the game haven't really changed. They go in, they create instability, and they create perpetual wars that are supposedly to create stability in the region. Unfortunately, U.S. intervention in the Middle East only serves to prop up these Islamic extremists. Because any time that they can say that they're fighting against the West, then all these young guys that had their parents bombed out by George Bush the first, all these kids have grown up, and now think of it, they're probably around 30 years old. They're in the fighting age, and guess what? They hate America because America came in and wiped out Iraq the first time. And then you got these other kids that were around when we started in Iraq in 2003. It's 11 years later. These kids have grown up, and now they hate America for what we did. So you got a bunch of Sunnis up there in the northern end of Iraq that absolutely hate us. Talk about blowback. I mean, this is a perfect example. We knocked out Saddam Hussein, which kind of had a grip on things over there. And once again, we created nothing but a horrible situation for the people that live there. And massive profits for the military-industrial complex. I mean, it's just like a pattern that we keep seeing. And now, one thing I wanted to jump into that we didn't get to last show is this: all this war propaganda going on now about Syria. And if you turn on CNN, you turn on Fox News, it's almost like now they've made Syria an afterthought. It's like, oh, yeah, we got drones over Syria. You know, the bombing, you know, Obama is yet to make a decision on the bombing, but when he does, you know, it's going to start. You know, they're not even questioning it. It's just like Iraq all over again. They're not even questioning the WMD. They're not questioning anything. The press, once again, is going to make itself look like idiots, but that doesn't matter because they're going to get us into war unless we do something big in the coming weeks. We're going to end up in a full-fledged war in Iraq and a new intervention in Syria.
Well, people need to understand what will happen if we fight Assad, because this is what everybody's itching for us to do. It now becomes something similar to were Germany to be attacked by Russia, where we can't hold back because this is an ally. We have absolutely have assets in the country, and they have their huge naval base there. And there's nothing short of what they'll have to do is declare pretty much war, man. I mean, it would become something where it's just a mutual alliance takes effect, and you know, if you call their bluff, they have to respond, and that's a real war, man. That becomes the thing they've wanted, and it becomes global, and you know, there's a real chance that that'll kind of do the horrible fix to the economy, and a lot of young people are going to end up probably having to go fight, man, because Selective Service is there for a reason. It's a contract you signed. And, you know, until you turn, I think it's 42 now, it's pretty much their discretion whether or not they want to ship you off, and I'm sure it could be used, man. If we fight Russia, it's not going to be like anything else where we can get by with these, you know, secret groups doing all these side missions and stuff like that with an occasional drone strike to back them up. It's going to be far beyond that.
Yeah, man, and it's almost like they, even though we kind of, in a way, won the Cold War there, except for the fact that we totally messed up in Vietnam. And then we can't forget about all the clandestine operations that we did to counter the rise of the Red Tide down in South America and Latin America and all the countries that we went into down there, which is, by the way, one of the main precursors to this quote-unquote immigration crisis that we have going on here. It's almost like these a-holes that are in charge were kind of let down by the fact that the Cold War ended, because they were making bank back then. You know, yeah, you got a little bit of a, you got a little extremist problem here and there in the Middle East, a couple wars here and there. Nothing compares to a full-on total war, which is what would have happened if we took on Russia. And as you were saying, this whole situation with Syria, and also Ukraine. Now you got to keep in mind, we're at this point in time, we're taking on Russia on more than one front. Okay, Syria is not the only place where we're taking on Russia right now.
Actually here, man. There's a big disclosure movement going on where there a lot of people want to report and whistleblow that they've absolutely infiltrated us, and they're intermingled with our intelligence apparatus, and it's a lot of their mafia and their oil guys, man, these big oligarchs over there that make our rich people look, you know, pretty pale in comparison, because they have their own private army. So it's very duplicitous, man. We don't understand what's going on. Nobody really knows at any real level what kind of game's being played here. But we do understand that Putin's not following the script for whatever reason. Maybe he came to his senses and realized he'd probably be off after the whole plan was put into motion. And people are getting wise to what's going on, man. I mean, India's probably on the verge of some kind of crazy revolt or revolution over there, because the UN's implemented Agenda 21 so harshly on them that, you know, farmers had been committing suicide by the millions now. So people aren't going to stand for these things anymore. They're not going to let people dictate their lives and kill them off and treat them like cattle. People are human beings, and we're going to adapt and find a way to kind of slough off the parasites. The thing is, they're never going to go willingly, and there's no way to negotiate, because these people generally don't really have an emotional capacity to them. So it becomes this really strange game where you kind of have to lower yourself to a certain level to deal with it. And I guess when people don't want to be violent because we're just not equipped, we're not trained, what are we going to do except try to defend ourselves? Best thing left to do is we start changing the game ourselves. That's what me and you are trying to do, Nick.
Yeah, and that's what needs to be done, man, because this whole escalation here, whether we're talking about Ukraine or Syria, or any of this stuff. I mean, I see these reports out of the corporate media every day. It's like, Russia is accused of supporting, you know, pro-Eastern separatists, and Russia is accused of arming these people and all that stuff. Okay, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they are. But are we not the ones that just got done sending something like $8 billion over to the Western Ukrainian regime? I mean, we're talking about a guy that's in charge of the country. Yats just stepped down, which was a former central banker. I guess we're starting to see a little pattern that's going on here. So you got Yats that just stepped down. The new prime minister, this Petro Poroshenko guy, I mean, he's an oligarch. He's a billionaire. And what are we doing? We're funneling him a bunch of money and arms. And we have the audacity to sit back here and say, oh, well, we're going to accuse Russia of arming the eastern Ukrainians and stuff. Well, yeah, obviously, because we're in there arming the West. We helped start up the quote-unquote revolution that took place in Ukraine. We helped finance it. We handpicked the guy Yats that ended up being the prime minister before anything even went down. Yeah, I think Russia probably will be in there trying to get their hand in the game as well, because they're trying to counter what we're doing, because they were working diplomatically prior to the overthrow of the old of the previous Ukrainian government. They were working diplomatically. The president of Ukraine, the former prime minister, decided not to basically join the EU, and that's when everything kicked off. And Russia offered them a better aid package, which was a sweeter deal. And one thing I just found out a few days ago over from, was it Global Research or one of these sites, that the aid package that was coming from the EU also was backed by the US and the IMF and all this stuff. And it was basically forcing Ukraine into using genetically modified Monsanto crops as well. So what ended up happening was the former Ukrainian regime sided with the Russian deal, which obviously was something better for their interests, and then all of a sudden they have this military coup, you know, and that's basically what happened. And so they didn't take the EU, the IMF aid package, and so we said, okay, we're going to just overthrow the government. That's basically what happened. So, of course, Russia's in there. Protecting their interests, and all of their pipelines run through there. Now, I'm not, by any means, I do not want anybody to think that we are in any way or form condoning Vladimir Putin, because Putin is an animal all to his own. He's a horrible oligarch as well. He's one of the richest political leaders in the world. He's a billionaire. And he's horrible. He's horrible on human rights and all that stuff. But at the same time, on the same token, so are we. I mean, we're over there propping up the Ukrainian regime, with it, which is rife with neo-Nazis. We prop up the Saudi Arabian regime, which is just a complete embarrassment to human rights, and I can't believe what we're doing. And they just executed a bunch of guys in Saudi Arabia, including a guy that was accused of witchcraft. And, I mean, we call these people our allies, and we just allow them to do that. And conveniently, the corporate media and CNN or MSNBC, Fox News, do you ever see them talking about the Saudi Arabians in a negative light? No. And I think that's why Amber Lyon, the famous journalist that blew the whistle on CNN because they were getting paid by dictators to write favorable stories for them, I think that is basically why she ended up quitting CNN and becoming a whistleblower, is because she realized, like, damn, we're getting paid by dictators to create news that makes them look good, you know? So I think people need to know about this stuff. And yes, of course, Russia is doing and has done horrible things currently and in the past. But the U.S. is doing just as bad, if not worse, horrible things. And therefore, we don't really have the moral authority to sit here and say, hey, Russia, get the hell out of Ukraine, while at the same time, we're sticking all of our filthy hands into Ukraine. And now, let's not forget about the story about Joe Biden. Joe Biden's son Joe Biden's son is now working for Ukraine's largest gas company, Gazprom. Okay, so let's not confuse ourselves and act like we went into Ukraine for humanitarian reasons.
And Gazprom is Russian. So a Russian company is going to be allowed to do business as usual. They're going to come in with a fracking merger with Exxon or something like that. Frack the hell out of Western Ukraine because they're untapped. Probably destroy their water table and force them to buy bottled water and then have to buy genetically modified foods that can resist oil spills. And then mission accomplished. That's the apparatus, dude. I mean, it's not too tough to see what's going on. They were subject to an economic hitman or whatever and installed the Goldman Sachs guy in there to run things. And Putin didn't like it. I think Putin's understanding what globalism is going to honestly do, and he's very nationalistic. That's the whole kind of problem going on. Are the Chinese leaders nationalistic? Not particularly, you know. They're susceptible to things. But even they don't want genetically modified foods. They understand what it is. And we're eating it every day, and it's really working on the American public. Huge cancer rates and huge infertility, just like it worked on the lab rats. So it's not hard to see what's going on. And, you know, things have got to change, and we've got to spearhead it.
Yeah, man. And one thing that we can't stand for is all this warmongering. I'm working on an article. It's going to be an expose. I'm trying to get a researcher to help me with this. But there's this guy that comes on Fox News. I swear it's basically every day. And he goes by the name of John Bolton, former ambassador for the U.S. He now works for the Brookings Institute, which is a neoconservative, quote-unquote, think tank. And he has ties to the defense industry. And he gets on Fox News, and the way you got to admire the way Fox News runs their broadcast. They have these talking heads on there that are basically have an IQ of like 10, and they present a story, and then they have these sheep in wolves in sheep clothing that come on the show, like John Bolton, and he comes on and he basically every day he gets on Fox News and he says, Iran is the greatest threat to world peace. We need to bomb Syria. We need to go back into Iraq. We should have never left. We need to start arming the Ukrainians and take a full throttle war into Russia. And we need to up our drone surveillance of the whole Middle East, basically. And this is what the guy gets on TV and says every day. And it's basically no different on CNN, MSNBC, any of these channels that anybody watches out there. It's all the same stuff. They present these stories, which are half of the story. And then
these guys need to strap them up, man. Just like Hannity, all the warmongers need to strap it up. Get your camos on, go through basic training, and go fight. If you're so sure you're going to be able to make it back, I mean, that's what you're asking guys to do. You're not asking guys to go fight, you know, a lesser army. When you're tangling with Russia, when you start fighting people that are more or less at your technological level. They're less in some ways, but they're more in others. We don't know who they got in their own Operation Paperclip. They may be ahead in other things. We don't know. And so it's obvious where it's leading. You know, World War III, and then China jumps on probably, you know, one side or the other, and then it becomes this massive calamity. We got to stop it. It's not going to be a mere war game while these guys are sitting in these little bunkers and enjoying their lives while everybody's fighting up top and millions perish. It's not going to work that way. I can't see it happening. We got to stop it.
Yeah, man. And you know, there's every war has been, you know, precluded by some type of propaganda, obviously, but many times false flags. If you look back at World War I, there was some type of false flag. World War II, you got Pearl Harbor, which many would say was preventable. So in a way, it's kind of a false flag. Iraq, Part 1. Vietnam, Gulf of Tonkin. You know, I think we all know the story. And now this time around, we got this thing about James Foley. And first it was the Yazidis that were trapped on this mountain, and the media called them all Christians because people know that most brainwashed Americans actually care about Christians. They don't really care about Muslims. Now Yazidis aren't Christian by any means. They're just as Christian as people that practice Islam, because they all take little bits and pieces out of the old, you know, book. So yeah, Yazidis are just about as Christian as a Muslim, but the media decided that they were going to portray them as Christians. And it turns out now, after all that propaganda, the airstrikes that have been going off weren't actually to protect the Yazidis, it was protect oil. The Foley beheading seems to be a staged beheading. Make sure you guys look this up. It's on the Anti-Media Facebook page. We don't have it on the website yet, but something to keep in mind, that a lot of the time when they try to trick us into getting into these wars, it's under a false pretext. just be aware of it. Stay wary, guys. See you Friday.